Usually when we talk about the bleeding edge of consumer tech on this deep dive, we're picturing like someone unboxing a sleek new mixed reality headset, right?
Oh, for sure. Or setting up some hyper-efficient smart home system.
Exactly. Something highly functional, something built to, boost your productivity.
Yeah.
But to really understand the massive shift we're looking at today, we need to completely abandon that mental image.
Right. Throw it completely out the window.
Yeah. Instead, I want you to picture a 24-year-old tech worker. She has a demanding, super high-stress career. She's single.
Mm-hmm.
And last month, she spent $200 on a cotton doll named Nianian.
And just to be clear, this wasn't some casual purchase for a niece or a nephew. You know, she doesn't even have kids.
Right.
This was a purchase entirely for herself. It represents this deeply personal investment.
Yeah. And Nianian isn't just like a plush toy sitting on a bed gathering dust either. Nianian has a physical miniature wardrobe. We are talking about custom made clothing with 8 different outfits that are meticulously organized by the season, like winter coats, summer dresses. The doll even has a preferred camera angle for photographs.
That is wild.
I know. And Nianian even has a dedicated social media account, which actually has significantly more followers than the owner herself.
Of course it does.
But here's the kicker. When someone eventually asks this young woman the question, you're probably wondering right now, like, you do know this doll can't actually hear you, right? Her response just totally stops you in your tracks.
Yeah, it really does.
He said, I know. But it fills a gap that most people in my life can't.
It's an incredibly profound statement, and it perfectly frames the mission of our discussion today.
For sure.
I want you, the listener, to picture a massive cityscape at dusk. You know, you have millions of solitary glowing screens illuminating these otherwise completely empty apartments.
A striking image.
Right. Because we are looking at a multi-billion dollar emotional migration that is happening right under our noses. We're diving into a fascinating tech essay today titled Gen Z Isn't Raising Kids, They're Raising AI.
Mm-hmm.
And our mission is to explore why an entire generation is quietly redirecting their deepest parental nurturing instincts toward things that cannot talk back. And simultaneously, how cutting-edge tech companies are frantically trying to figure out how to give those inanimate things a soul.
Okay, let's unpack this, because I remember the Beanie Baby craze from the 90s, right?
Oh, yeah, the plastic tag protectors.
Yes, where people were hoarding little stuffed bears in plastic boxes, treating them like fragile investments or quirky Lucky Charms.
Right.
And on the surface, dropping hundreds of dollars on a cotton doll sounds kind of like just another fad. Mm. But reading through our sources today, the way people are interacting with these objects, it feels entirely different.
Oh, it is entirely different.
Like, it doesn't feel like a financial play or a passing trend. Is this really a different beast?
It absolutely is, primarily because of the sheer scale and the psychological depth of the attachment. I mean, this isn't some quirky subculture you stumble across in a dark corner of the internet.
Right.
In China alone, the online market for these cotton dolls hit 10 billion RMB. That is roughly 1.4 billion U.S. dollars. And that was back in 2021.
That's massive.
And that sector has been growing at 10% annually. If you look at platforms like Xiaohongshu, which is essentially the Chinese equivalent of Instagram, or their video platform Bilibili, being a quote-unquote doll mom is a massive recognized lifestyle category.
Wow.
You have dedicated creators, high-end brand sponsorships, and these just deeply entrenched communities.
A billion-dollar industry built entirely around adult women mothering cotton dolls. Mm. That is just staggering to think about.
And it extends far beyond just the cotton dolls, too. Take the Labubu phenomenon.
Oh, I've seen those.
Yeah. It's a character created by Pop Mart. It's this sort of ugly, cute plush monster with jagged little teeth.
Yeah.
And Labubu has absolutely zero functionality. It's not a smart device. It literally doesn't do anything.
Right. It's just a plushie.
Exactly. Yet it drove Pop Mart's overseas revenue up by a factor of 10 in just 3 years. You literally had attendees at Paris Fashion Week hanging these plush monsters off their designer luxury bags.
That is wild.
They became these high-end status symbols of emotional attachment.
Which is fascinating, because if you dig a little deeper into the high-end collector space, like the BJD or ball-jointed doll communities, the psychology gets even more intense.
Oh, for sure.
These are highly articulated, hyper-customized figures. Collectors are spending thousands of dollars on a single doll. Thousands. And then waiting months for bespoke artists to paint their faces.
Right. It's a huge time investment.
But when you look at how they talk about these dolls, they never say, oh, I love my toy. the phrase that keeps coming up is it's like taking care of another version of myself.
And that phrasing right there is the key to unlocking this whole phenomenon.
Yeah.
Taking care of another version of yourself is an act of deep psychological projection. It's an emotional outlet for a generation feeling immense pressure. But this behavior didn't just materialize out of thin air, you know?
No, of course not.
We've actually been leaving digital breadcrumbs pointing toward this exact moment for the last 30 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Looking at the history of this,
yeah.
It is wild how clearly you can trace the lineage back to 1996 and the original Tamagotchis.
Oh, man, the Tamagotchis.
Right, those little plastic keychains with the tiny unlit LCD screens. You had a cluster of pixels that you had to feed, play with, and clean up after.
Yep.
And if you neglected it, the code would literally terminate. It died. Bandai ended up selling 82 million of those worldwide. Like, people were legitimately stressed during the school day about their digital pets starving.
Which just shows that the underlying human need to nurture was so strong that we willingly projected life onto 5 black pixels.
Exactly.
And as technology advanced, so did the canvas we were projecting onto. By 2005, the form factor moved from the keychain to the desktop computer.
Ah, the QQ Pet.
Right. Tencent launched QQ Pet, which was this virtual penguin that lived on the bottom right corner of your computer screen. You fed it, you bought it virtual items, it could get sick.
And at its peak, there were over 100 million of those virtual penguins alive simultaneously on Tencent servers. 100 million.
And the emotional attachment was not superficial at all. When Tencent eventually sunsetted that service and shut the servers down in 2008, the user reaction was visceral.
Yeah, I bet.
People weren't just complaining about losing a video game, you know. They were going onto forums and genuinely mourning. They were writing things like, "My pet died." They had poured years of daily care into those digital entities.
So if we trace that line to today, the form factor is essentially bifurcated into 2 separate lanes, right? Mm-hmm. On the physical side, we have the cotton dolls, the Labubu figures, the ball-jointed dolls that require physical care and styling.
Mm.
But on the digital side, that QQ penguin has evolved into highly sophisticated AI platforms like Character.ai, Replica, and Zinji. And the adoption rates are just wild.
They really are.
Roughly 72% of American teens have interacted with an AI companion. Even more striking, 80% of Gen Z say they would actively consider a long-term relationship with an AI.
This is exactly why Harvard Business Review recently published an analysis identifying therapy and companionship as the absolute number one consumer use case for artificial intelligence by 2025.
Wow.
Not search optimization, not generating code, not writing better corporate emails. Companionship.
You know, what does this all mean? Why is this happening right now? We know the human desire to nurture has always existed, but suddenly we are seeing this massive cultural pivot toward virtual and inanimate companionship.
Right.
It feels like there's a cocktail of societal pressures driving this.
There is, and it really comes down to 3 converging forces. First, it's the stark reality of modern loneliness colliding with the search for emotional safety.
Sure.
Just look at the demographics. Marriage rates across East Asia have roughly halved over the last decade. You have over 100 million people living completely alone in China today.
That is nearly a third of the entire U.S. population, just living in solitary apartments in one country.
Exactly.
But it's not that people are suddenly asexual or entirely antisocial. It's that the barriers to entry for human intimacy have skyrocketed, while the emotional risk of engaging with other humans remains incredibly high.
Right, exactly.
Think about it. If you are vulnerable with a human partner, there is a constant underlying risk of betrayal, of judgment, of exhausting arguments. You have to navigate their trauma while managing your own.
Precisely. Human relationships are inherently messy and volatile.
Yeah, they are.
But a cotton doll is never going to pick a fight with you after a 60-hour work week. An ACOM companion won't cheat on you. It is never going to say the absolute worst possible thing to you when you are at your lowest and most fragile point.
That's a really good point.
For a generation overwhelmed by external pressures, emotional safety isn't just a perk. It is the killer feature of these virtual relationships.
And it's not just the emotional risk keeping people away from traditional family building either. There is a brutal financial math to this equation, which is the second force.
Oh, the economics are huge.
Raising a real child to the age of 18 in a major Chinese city currently costs well over 1 million RMB.
Yeah.
And that financial figure doesn't even begin to touch the invisible costs, right? The severe sleep deprivation, the loss of personal freedom, the massive sacrifices to career progression.
The contrast is undeniable. You are comparing a million RMB lifelong commitment to a cotton doll that costs $50, or an AI companion that is essentially free, or, you know, maybe $5 a month for a premium subscription.
It's hight and day.
People are finding a way to access the psychological and emotional rewards of nurturing a life, of caring for a dependent, but with zero irreversible consequences. It is a highly rational, low-cost emotional substitution.
But while the high cost of living and the fear of emotional vulnerability aren't brand new concepts, they've been building for years.
Right.
So what's the third force, the catalyst, that has thrown gasoline on this fire?
It's that the technology has finally caught up to the psychology.
Ah, right.
That is the crucial tipping point. Think back to your Tamagotchi or that desktop penguin. Mm. Those required you to do 100% of the emotional heavy lifting.
Right.
It was essentially an emotional monologue. You were projecting your feelings onto a blank, scripted canvas. It was like writing in a diary.
Right. The Tamagotchi just beeped. It didn't know if I was having a bad day at middle school. It just wanted its pixelated hamburger.
Exactly. But today's large language models have changed that paradigm from a monologue into a deeply personalized dialogue. Modern AI companions don't just respond, they remember.
Oh, wow.
If you mention offhand that you are nervous about a presentation on Tuesday, the AI will proactively message you on Wednesday to ask how it went.
That is wild.
It analyzes your text patterns to read your emotional state. If you are typing in short, clipped sentences, it adjusts its tone to be more soothing. It learns your specific communication style. It's no longer a diary. It's a dance partner that constantly adjusts to your rhythm.
So if the technology has finally given these digital entities an intelligent, empathetic voice, what happens when you combine that voice with an immersive world?
That's where things get really fascinating.
There is an AI-driven platform from our source called Utopia that really illustrates where this is heading. And here's where it gets really interesting for you listening.
Utopia is arguably the best case study we have right now for the future of digital presence.
Right. In Utopia, users build what the community calls OCs, original characters. But you aren't just like picking a hairstyle in an armor class like in a traditional video game.
No, not at all.
You are engineering a comprehensive psychological profile. You design their worldview, their deep-seated traumas, their aspirations, their complex backstories, and then the AI takes over.
And the user essentially steps back and just watches.
Exactly. You watch your character live its life, go to work, and most importantly, interact with other users' characters inside this persistent virtual world.
And the terminology the user base employs is incredibly telling. They don't call it playing a game. They refer to it as OC planning. They're acting as a director or a parent, guiding a life from above.
And the engagement metrics are just staggering. Heavy users are spending 3 to 4 hours a day logged into Utopia. But they aren't mashing buttons or completing quests.
No.
They are engaging in hours of passive companionship. They will spend a whole evening just setting up a scenario and observing the organic chemistry unfold between their character and someone else's character. It's like writing a screenplay, but the actors have free will.
What's even more revealing about Utopia is a specific feature they implemented. Your character can step out of the game world and become a small desktop sprite.
Oh, I love this part.
A little animated figure that lives on your computer screen, quietly sitting on the edge of your open windows, keeping you company while you type away at your spreadsheets.
Which completely changes the feeling of sitting in an empty apartment. Just having that ambient movement, that sense of a shared presence.
Exactly. And looking at that desktop sprite reveals a fundamental truth about everything we've been discussing today. This is the author's core insight.
Okay.
If you look at the cotton dolls and the Labubu figures, they are bodies without souls. They have physical weight, texture, and presence in your room, but no mind.
Mm.
Conversely, the AI chatbots living in apps on your phone are souls without bodies. They possess intelligence, memory, and empathy, but they have absolutely no physical footprint in your world. They're trapped behind the cold glass of a screen.
So the holy grail for this entire multi-billion dollar industry is figuring out how to crash those two worlds together. People don't just want a smart voice in an app, and they don't just want a dumb plush toy.
Right.
What they actually want is both, a virtual being that has a soul and a tangible presence in their physical space.
Which brings us to the actual mechanics of how developers are trying to build that future right now.
Yeah.
There are two very distinct philosophical approaches currently in development to solve this body and soul problem.
Okay, let's hear them.
The first approach is a system called Mio. Mio is designed as a social circle. Instead of one perfect companion, it provides an ecosystem of 25 different AI personas.
Yeah, each one has a highly independent personality, unique temperaments, and separate memories. It's built to replicate the complex, chaotic dynamic of a diverse human friend group.
Okay, that's interesting. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you have a project called Lumi.
Right, Lumi.
Lumi abandons the idea of human personas entirely. It is a complete blank slate. It has no preset face, no pre-written backstory. Visually, in the physical world, it manifests as a breathing orb of light.
It's very sci-fi.
It really is.
Yeah.
Who Lumi becomes, its entire personality and disposition, is shaped exclusively by what you choose to talk to it about. Mm. It is a pure reflection of the user's emotional input.
Exactly.
But wait. I get the psychological appeal of having a customized personality, but I'm really struggling with the hardware side of this. My smartphone already has an incredibly advanced AI model on it. It knows my schedule. It knows my voice. Why on earth would I buy a glowing orb for my nightstand or a dedicated desktop device when I can just pull my phone out of my pocket and text the AI?
Yeah.
Like, we text our real human friends all day long. Why is a separate physical form factor so critical?
Because you are hitting the exact same wall that developers in the space are currently slamming into. It is a concept known in the industry as the chat ceiling.
The chat ceiling. Explain how that works. Why is chat a ceiling?
Because, fundamentally, chat gets boring.
Oh.
And it is not because the AI models lack intelligence or because the context windows aren't large enough. It's because text-based chat, purely as a medium, has a rigidly fixed ceiling for intimacy.
Yeah.
Think about a real human friendship. If your absolute only mode of interaction with a close friend was sending text messages back and forth, if you never met in person, if you never sat in the same room, if you never went for a walk together in silence, that relationship would inevitably plateau.
Oh, I see.
It would remain shallow because it is entirely transactional.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
A real relationship isn't just about exchanging information. It's about shared space.
Mm-hmm.
It's about looking over and seeing someone else just existing in the same room as you.
Precisely. Chat requires active, constant input to sustain itself. Presence can be passive. So the monumental challenge facing AI developers right now isn't how do we make the large language model output better text.
Right.
The challenge is how do we engineer an experience that goes beyond chat.
Wow.
The ultimate goal is an AI that possesses a multidimensional presence in your life. It needs to live in your phone when you are commuting on the train, transition into a desktop companion observing your work during the day, manifest as a glowing orb of ambient light on your nightstand that physically breathes in rhythm with you when you're trying to sleep.
I know.
And exist as a weighted physical plush toy you can hold when you are having a panic attack. It has to break out of the chat window to shatter that ceiling.
You know, when you lay it out like that, it fundamentally reframes how we look at the modern loneliness epidemic.
Yeah.
The narrative is usually that Gen Z is broken, right?
Yeah.
Oh, constantly.
That they are isolated and refusing to engage with the world or care for things. But the reality is that the ancient, hardwired human urge to nurture, to protect, and to raise something hasn't disappeared at all.
Not even a little bit.
It is just being redirected into an entirely new, frictionless digital paradigm. Mm. And based on the billions of dollars flowing into this space, this isn't some temporary coping mechanism. We are literally watching the birth of cyber parenting.
And that evolution brings us to a really fascinating precipice. If we look at the roadmap for systems like Mio the platform with 25 independent AI personas, there is an experiment currently in the works that pushes this concept to its absolute limit.
Oh, really?
Yes. The developers are taking these 25 highly distinct AIs and having them sit down together to play the complex social deduction game Werewolf.
Wait, really? For anyone who hasn't played Werewolf, it's a game entirely based on deception, forming secret alliances, reading the room, and voting people out. It requires immense social intelligence, and these 25 AI personas are going to play it with each other.
Without any human intervention.
That's crazy.
And we already know from the data in the Utopia game that human users will happily spend hours every single day just passively watching their created characters build chemistry and conflict with other digital characters.
Which raises a wild question for you to mull over as we wrap up today. If the technology successfully breaks through the chat ceiling, if we are entering a world where our virtual companions don't just rely on us for interaction, but actually start socializing, playing games, and forming complex, independent relationships with each other, what exactly happens to our role as the parent?
Think back to the very beginning of our conversation, Nianian, the cotton doll with the meticulous wardrobe and the thousands of social media followers.
Right.
Right now, her human owner is carefully arranging her seasonal outfits, setting up the lighting, and taking the photos to post online. But what happens on the day the digital soul inside that doll no longer needs her to hold the camera?
Are we building these deeply complex digital lives just so we can eventually become the audience to them? That is a provocative thought that is going to stick with me for a long time.